This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Can't buy me love,
love. The Beatles on an All Beatles Tuesday. That's old Beatles, too. Before they started dropping acid and shit. Joining me from the great state of Texas is Tim Lynch. What's going on, Lynch Bob? What are you doing? How's life?
Life is pretty good, thanks. Not a whole lot going on.
Give us an update.
Cold front came through yesterday, and that's kind of nice.
I saw that, getting a little rain down there in Texas. What about Tim lives in the southeast corner of Texas. So it would be southeast of Galveston, go along the coast, and Tim lives in that triangle down there. Yes? Is that a fair representation of it?
Yeah, I live in what's known as the Rio Grande Valley. Yeah, down in McAllen. So I'm right in the middle of it.
All right, so
it's what they call tropical Texas.
Tropical Texas. Why tropical?
Because it's tropical. That's the weather pattern. Yeah, it's pretty nice in the wintertime, that is.
Yeah, no kidding. I was going to say tropical in the summer, maybe not so much. Tell us about the Marine Corps detachment that you are. How do you you like the Grand Potentate? What is your exact title?
No, I am the Senior Vice Commandant.
Senior Vice Commandant.
So, right. So you got a Commandant, you got a Senior Vice, and a Junior Vice. There's five officers. But
right.
It just we formed up in June is when we were came on the rolls. It's a young detachment. It's right now we've got 49 members. We're trying to get to 100 here by the year's end, and we'll have to see. It's mostly younger guys, but it's like people that served when we were serving in the 90s, 80s, 90s. Not too many vets from Afghanistan or Iraq. Not yet, anyway.
Well, they don't want to join because of the red windbreakers and the piss cutters, man.
Yeah, no, it is. It's kind of a goofy uniform and whatnot. But
what are you going to do about that? I think it needs to be changed because there's no reason why Marine Corps League should not be thriving around the country with young members. Because, and I say this all the time, you've heard me say this, when you get out and you go home or wherever home is going to be, the first place you ought to check into is Marine Corps League. Hey, man, I'm looking for a job. I'm looking to get smart about who to see in the VA and maybe where to live. It's a network of Marines that are in your hometown. That should be a natural landing spot for everybody.
Yeah. And our detachment is pretty strong on the VA. We've got a lot of guys that are VSOs. And matter of fact, I'm going to be on the board down here as a service rep for the McAllen VA. But we're trying to get there. It's the piss cutters is a limiting thing. But we've got the Commandant is a co-owner of a 5x5 brewery here, which is an old veteran-owned brewery. And so every weekend we kill some barbecue and make money. we'll get them in there. You'll wait and see.
Well, no. Hey, look, that's the way they're Marines, man. Show them a good time, and they'll show up.
His name's Sean Downey. Now, he was like an MMO at the 5th Marine Regiment. So he's got like more field time from just being the maintenance guy in the armory. You know what I mean? But he's a pretty sharp guy. But we'll see what we can do about attracting younger members.
Well, I think it's I was just talking to somebody about this yesterday who called me, and look, either you get on board and you get involved in social media and you make that thing younger, or guess what happens? You're gonna be in a museum.
Yeah, no, we, you know, we get strong, you know, we're strong on the social media, like I said. We get more and more people as that brewery thing goes every weekend as the weather's cooling off. It's a little bit more, more of an attractive venue because in the summertime, man, it's just too damn hot out.
What's the humidity like?
Pretty high. it's pretty high. So yeah, you know, and I mean, the average in the summer is it's 105, 110. And it's just baking, and the sun's just, you know, just baking you out here. So right now it's 55 degrees and cloudy, and I'm just loving it. I'm like, yes, this is nice.
How long has it been like that? Not very long.
Yeah, 24 hours.
And what was it
exactly?
And what was it before that? It was
it was 98 degrees and muggy.
Yikes. That's awful.
Yeah, I know. Right now it's pretty nice.
Let's talk some Kermit. No, look, I'm a huge fan of the Marine Corps Lake, but I mean I've gone through this stuff with Combat Cameron Association. I've talked to the Marine Corps Mustang Association, and they are all getting ready to go extinct because you either have to get younger and you have to get active and you have to have a presence on social media, or you know, cue the music, boys. We're marching into the museum.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And most of the other detachments, you know, from Corpus Christi and whatnot, those are, the younger ones are Vietnam vets. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's...
So it's not, we're one of the few detachments that even has a younger guy. I mean, I'm one of the oldest in the detachment at 60, so.
That's
unusual.
No, that's way unusual. That's all. That's good.
Yeah.
So you got to build on that, and then you got to help other. You got to export that, man. You got to export that. For instance, you know, why would the Marine Corps League not be on All Marine, not be a sponsor of All Marine Radio, and not have their, you know, us meet telling their stories every month and filling up the internet? So when you Google Marine Corps League, you like have all these interviews with all these detachment commanders or people doing good things around the country that say, hey man, come join us. We're looking for a few good Marines. All right. And there's no reason for it. It's stupid.
Because we rolled out like after the flooding down here with a bunch of guys from, some kind of a target at 4th Marine types, some kind of, land surveillance targeting platoon. But anyway, as far as stripping out, we went and fixed up some people's house. You know, took all the riding stuff out of the bottom and fixed the fence. And,
yeah,
you know, we do stuff like that as a matter of
who doesn't want to do that and hang out with Marines and fix somebody's house and feel good when you go home?
It took like 6 hours.
Yeah, it's a Grinch.
It was amazing.
Yeah, it's a Grinch moment, man. It's a Grinch moment. When's our next project?
So we put that local, you know, it goes on local. But you would think the Marine Corps League is so squirrely about money. Holy smokes, man.
Well, for good reason, though.
It all flows up. It doesn't go the other way.
Yeah, but you know, but we both know for good reasons, because, you know, you look around the news cycles and all of a sudden you see these idiots. My cousin is the chief financial officer of the Diocese of Sacramento. Okay, right. Uh-huh. Say the word bingo in front of my cousin and watch what reaction you get. He'll run for the door. Right? Could you imagine? Uh-huh. You know, trying to make sure that all these parishes that have their bingo nights with the money they pull in on some of those things. Are doing all that appropriately. Nightmare.
I got one for you. How about vetting the Section 8 recipients of Toys for Tots, so that you don't have the same families going to every fire station in the city and signing up for the Toys for Tots and getting six different deliveries of toys.
And then turning around and putting them on eBay.
That's the level of planning. No, because I've been in this planning with the reserve guys for Toys for Tots. You know, that's what we're doing this year. And that's the level of planning that Tots have gotten to because otherwise they said it just runs rampant because there's so many toys that come up from Toys R Us. And it's so easy for that stuff to start slipping away and ending up in the bazaars and stuff. And it was, that's exactly what they were finding. So as part of the Toys for Tots finding the Costco with vetting the list that they get from the fire departments so that they're not giving like, you know, 15 sets of toys to the same family.
Yeah, no, it's
ever think of that one?
Yeah, no, it's a nightmare. So you understand that stuff, but I mean, to me, the Marine Corps League is a great. It's got a great heritage, but it's got to get beyond the piss cutters and the crazy red jackets because younger Marines see that stuff and they're like, "Yeah, not for me, bro." All right? Maybe when I'm 80, right, and I need to go fire an M1 at somebody's funeral, I'll join. But again, it's stupid. When you need the Marine Corps League is when you relocate it, when you transition. Those guys can help you, and they can make you smart.
They seem to have a real internal focus, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of them exist to provide a color guard.
Right.
They've got to get beyond that. You know, we're going to be a while before we organize a color guard because there's a lot of rules and regulations that go with that to clearly put the weapons. But the fact of the matter is that you've got to, we're trying to be more proactive and reach out and attract a younger guy. The only reason it works for us is we got a brewery. So most of our stuff focuses around the super brewery.
One of the things that I was talking about yesterday was that it should be part of the transition, you know, it should be part of you transitioning. It shouldn't just be the color guard, right? It should be, these guys can help you transition, man. They'll make you smart.
Yeah.
They'll make you smart. And so I just think there's so much more that could be done with it than is being done with it. And that's something we need to work on, man. And you need to be a part of it. You need to be the voice of the Marine Corps as the vice commandant, the vice senior commandant of the McAllen, Texas, what is it? Detachment?
It's the Rio Grande Valley.
The Rio Grande Valley.
Detachment, yeah.
Sorry about that.
14567. Thank you very much.
14567. Double dog. All right. Give me some thoughts on Afghanistan. Afghanistan going good. Afghanistan going bad. You know, it looks like if you watch the fighting season, it looks like the Afghan National Army took it on the chin. However, we're able to devote more sorties and kill more people, which I believe tends to be helpful in stripping little T from big T and then trying to negotiate with little T. Give me your thoughts on it.
I'm not so optimistic.
Okay.
You know, Taliban at times have taken horrific casualties for a long, long time. And it doesn't seem to affect them. I mean, the kids fighting now were children when we were there. You know, and there were plenty of them. Most of the Afghan society are younger people anyway, even demographically. But I don't see where the Taliban has to do a whole lot of negotiating. What the hell they got to negotiate about? They seem to be a couple times they went in on all the offensive where they ought not to have. You know, like Ghazni
right.
You know, and a couple other, what the hell, so they did a couple other places too. And they took some punishment, but there seems to be a lot more foreign fighters arriving there, and that's not good. And I hear from people down in Nangarhar, there's a lot down there, and that would be ISIS guys, and that's not good.
What does that mean when there's more foreign fighters?
I'm not talking Pakistani, I'm talking Arabs and stuff.
Okay.
People that are slipping out of, always from Syria and Iraq and that kind of, a lot of those guys.
Should we not have expected some of that though?
Sure. Yeah. You're gonna get some of that, but not in the kind of numbers that are notable. And so, you know, that's a festering problem, which has a lot of the Army's attention right now, the American Army down in Nangarhar. But it does not seem to me that the government is doing much to expand any kind of a sense of calm and control outside of Kabul. I mean, it's just not. you know, Kandahar is still a friggin' nightmare.
Well, that's always been the question, right? The question has always been, can they do that? Because if they do that, it'll be the first time in the history of that country that they've done it.
Yeah. Herat's stable because Herat's got strong men out there. They've got their own warlords that are keeping things semi tamped down. The north has gone to shit. Even Mazar Sharif isn't that stable anymore. So it doesn't appear to me that you're making a whole lot of progress where it counts. And where it counts is giving the people a sense of security and that the government's in control and has their interests in mind. I don't see any of that happening. So you've got that. You've got Eric Prince has been over there going around the regional strongmen, talking to them about his plans. I tell you right now, you know, what we're doing is not sustainable financially. All that money that's pledged, that starts petering out in the next couple of years. And then what are you going to do? Because the Afghans can't afford their own military. And so the game that we're playing, specifically the Marine Corps playing in the Helmand, that's the long game, and it's probably going to work in the Helmand, but there's a whole other country that's falling to shit, you know, behind them. So I'm not that optimistic.
Wow. All right. I'm trying to be optimistic, right? I believe that if it was not winnable, I don't see the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman going down a path that would make them part of history of people that deluded themselves. So,
but they've got. I think they're making the best out of a shit situation. I mean, they're playing the long game, and statistically.
Okay, let me ask you this. So
the long game to go right.
All right. So let's just for the sake of argument say all your pessimism is well founded. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say, for the sake of discussion, that the Afghans are not going to be able to pull off this creating some kind of unified nation. That what we will deal with in Afghanistan is a series of city states run by warlords. All right. So now what? We accept that we're not going to be able to change it. Do we throw in with warlords and say, look, as long as it's contested and there's not the loss of substantial numbers of Americans, we can live with Afghanistan. What we can't live with is if we leave, what will come in our wake. We can't live with that because that takes us back to a safe haven, a place that people can go to freely develop attacks and on the United States.
Well, I think the way the Afghan ends up is with a central government in Kabul that exercises loose administrative control over the provincial power centers, just sort of like it's always been.
All right, hold on. You have to reposition your phone because it just got the audio.
I'm sorry. I said what you end up with is a central government in Kabul that has loose administrative control over the rest of the country, which is basically dominated by regional power centers, which is how it's always been in the past,
right,
more or less.
Right.
Okay, that's how it ends up.
Got it.
Who those regional power centers are and how much of that is negotiated with Taliban or whatnot, that's the question. Like that's the end stage. I can see us ending up with some type of a agreement that would allow us to pull out and that would stop the fighting in Afghanistan. I could see some of that. You'd have to crush those ISIS assholes in Nangarhar first, but that's doable. I mean, I could see it ending that way, but, you know, the Taliban right now is in a position to have a lot to say about how that ends up, because right now they're not losing. They're just not.
Hmm. All right. My guest this morning, Tim Lynch. He's a former Marine officer, retired. infantry officer, former member of the United States Navy as well, a corpsman, for those of you who don't know his story. And we served together at the infantry officer course in around 1990-91 and at the basic school together. So he joins us today. We're talking about Afghanistan. Tim worked in Afghanistan as a civilian doing stuff, and so has a little bit different perspective, got around the country more than the rest of us tended to do. So we've been talking about that. Yeah, it's like, okay, so instead of looking at Afghanistan from the top down saying, okay, here's where we'd like it to be, let's look at it from the bottom up and say, okay, what could we live with? And so what we could live with is a little bit more Taliban control. How does more Taliban control change the country?
It doesn't fundamentally change it fundamental level. Let's say, for instance, they see parts of Uruzgan and Kandahar and whatnot joined. Taliban administrative control. It's a Taliban governor running the place and whatnot. They've got Sharia law as opposed to the Kabul-based law. You know, they're going to have, and that would essentially, that would be about it. You know, it would sort of revert back to how it was 100 years ago, when Kabul was, an administrative capital, and they, people tolerated an army till they kept the foreign armies out of their country. But that's not working too well right now. I guess us, the borders are gone. You know what I mean? But yeah, I could see it ending that way. But there's a lot of fighting to get there. Like, my Taliban didn't have a whole lot of reason to be granting a ton of concessions, right?
Well, again, it's, you know, one of the things that you've talked about is in your experience and discussions, where did the support for the Taliban come from? And you've said repeatedly on the program that the perception among farmers in particular in an agrarian society is that the Taliban were fair relative to land disputes. And in an agrarian society, land disputes are a big deal. And so their legitimacy comes from that. And so,
it's the number one issue in the country is whose title to the land is the valid title. It can't be underestimated. And it's not just the agrarian people who find that the Sharia-based courts are more equitable. There are people in the Kabul government who go to Taliban courts to get civil disputes in their ancestral lands. I mean, they're absolutely considered to be a more valid way of doing it. And if they decide against you, there's not a whole, the appeal process is swift. Nobody's going to bitch about it. But yeah, I mean, who owns that land to this day remains a gigantic issue, because there's a lot of people who moved into land by the Taliban in the 90s. And all that stuff has to be adjudicated. And it's a slow, painful process, and it's better done with the mullahs. Quite frankly, they tend to at least have some sense of fairness.
Interesting. All right. Next question. Give me your thoughts on the Turkey Saudi Arabia thing going on. Right. When you get Turkey standing up and saying, talking about people missing and journalists, it's almost laughable. So now.
Yeah, it's like an Alinsky move, you know, using our standards against us, because I don't think right now the administration wants to be finding reasons to be bitching about the Saudi regime, particularly given all the support that we're giving them in the fighting down in Yemen, you know, and all the problems that's causing. So yeah, it's, talk about a difficult situation, man. They kind of got us by the short hairs, if you know what I'm saying. I mean,
I do know what you're saying.
There's no good way out of it. Yeah, there's no good. You can't ignore it. There's no good way out of it. I mean, as bad as that cat was, he's lucky he didn't get droned by Obama, for Christ's sakes. But I guess waiting for the post will get you out of that drone or get you off the JPL anyway. But man, what a shit situation.
Yeah.
Isn't that typical of a stupid spy organization? I think they believe what they see in the movies and whatnot. Like, they get away with that kind of stuff. Didn't even realize the guy's got an Apple Watch on him. Come on, dude.
No, I mean,
come on.
It's, but, you know, again, people vanishing. If we're going to, so the only reason this is a story, okay, is there's two reasons. The guy's not an American citizen, okay, but he does write for the Washington Post. Okay, so that's reason one. Okay, so the Washington Post has an interest. Just remember, but not an American citizen. Two, the reason it's a story is Turkey made it a story. Okay, if we're going to start doing stories on journalists going missing or people going missing in either Turkey or Saudi Arabia, stand by to get in a long line, okay?
Oh, yeah, man. Turkey probably leads the world in disappearing journalists, for Christ's sake.
They, in fact, do.
They got a whole freaking gulag system for them. No, it's a joke. But the thing is you paint it into a corner. You've got to react somehow.
There's no good
options here. You can't. It's not going to go away. That's for sure.
Do you cancel the arms? The $110 billion arms sale to. Do you cancel that?
No, not before the midterms. Oh, hell no. That's a lot of cash, man. That's the thing about the Saudis is they spend a lot of money. You know, there's something to be said for that.
Yeah. Look, we're not, I, to me, that's laughable. Okay. Like, look,
yeah.
I got it, you know, and I'm not making light of somebody losing their life. But let me tell you, when you want to go down that road with these governments, good luck to you. Good luck to you.
Exactly.
Because it's not like this is an anomaly. It's not like this is an anomaly. So Secretary of State is in Riyadh right now meeting with the Crown Prince and King Abdullah trying to figure out what actually happened. So anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway. So.
Yeah, I'm sure it was rogue agents. Rogue agents got it in their head. They had a big mistake. We're going to punish them. Don't worry. I feel sorry for those guys.
Yeah, they're going to have to eat it, right? They're going to have to eat it for the country.
Oh, you know how that works. At least that's the way it is in the movie. See how it goes.
Yeah. Well, somebody's going to have to sign a confession saying that they did this.
Oh, yeah.
They knew they weren't supposed to. They acted on their own, and then they're going to go to prison.
Yeah.
Now,
trying to destabilize the kingdom.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
So you'll know it's actually a rogue agent if they're beheaded. Okay. if they're just sent to prison, you'll know that means that it was on the take. So if somebody gets beheaded, it's you'll know that they did go rogue or somebody's truly pissed off. Next question. Secretary Mattis, a Democrat. Yes or no?
I have no idea.
Answer? No.
He's never registered
with a political party.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Wasn't there something about somebody, Trump calling him a Democrat or like that, something like that?
Yeah, on 60 Minutes.
Oh, that's right.
He said,
yeah.
You know, he is kind of a Democrat. It was about Nikki Haley and all the turnover in his administration, blah, 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 blah. Will Secretary Mattis go next? Well, at some point they all go. You know, he is kind of a Democrat.
Oh man! Well, I hope it's their time soon. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I hope he goes, but not for another few years. Next question. Give me your thoughts on Elizabeth Warren's Pocahontas thing.
Well, I don't know how she thinks that blood test in any way, shape, or form validates her claim. She's less American Indian than. Statistically, than you and I would be.
I wonder how much.
I think
I wonder how much of an American Indian I am. What's the average? What's the average like?
The average was like 0.8 is the statistical average. She's like 0.16, so she's like half of what you would expect for a normal Caucasian American.
There was like between 6 and 10 generations ago, she has somebody in her gene pool that was Native American.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
I don't think that lets you check the block. That's just me. I could be wrong.
No. And I'm not buying that by giving the mix. I think that's a charitable interpretation.
I saw the explanation of somebody who's like the Secretary of State for the, I think she claimed to be Cherokee. And he said, look, all that measures is from this hemisphere. It could be from Latin America. It could be, so, I mean, it doesn't do anything. Yeah, they did not do her any favors with the statement they released. I wonder if they're Republicans.
No. But then she puts out this, well, I didn't watch it. I watched part of it. But this 5-minute YouTube video.
Yes.
And it's like who thought that was a good idea?
She's running for president.
It's like here, I'm proving that I have no right to claim this, and here I go with this 5-minute video explaining to you why I'm calling it. I'm, oh my God. Talk about tone deaf. I think she's done at a national level. Quite frankly,
I don't think she was ever. Well, look. If you look at national politics, while we're talking about it, the country elects. If you start from Ronald Reagan, the country elects George Bush the elder, right? And and you could see how independents would vote for George Bush, salt guy, blah blah blah. From Bush, we go to Bill Clinton. Clinton, although a Democrat, is a centrist, right? He is not a liberal. Mm-hmm. He is not a liberal. All right. From there, we go from Clinton to Bush, right? So he's a conservative, and with you know some liberal tendencies relative to social. Programs and whatnot. So you can see where independents would support him. We go to Obama, who portrayed himself as a centrist, right? Liberally, you know, socially liberal, but economically a centrist, according to DOD, a centrist. Elizabeth Warren, left of center. Bernie, Sanders, left of center. They're not getting elected. In this country, our country, the independents of this country who elect the president, they will not go that far left, you know. So I mean, look, Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, but don't tell the Democrats, dude. Let the Democrats do what they're doing, because that seems to be all they're offering right now. It's just strange.
Well, they've got a problem in that their party is definitely making a left-hand turn, and that's not where the independents are. So if you're looking at who elects the president, right, the 30% that are Republican, they got no choice. They vote Republican. The 35% that are Democrat, they got no choice. They'll vote Democrat. It's the it's that 35% that sit in the middle that elect the president. Depending on which way they tilt, that's how we go. And so,
yep, I agree.
And they don't tilt far left. So, anyway, just my thoughts.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely on that. Yeah, that stuff that went on with Kavanaugh did them no favors to Democrats. I do not.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. The backlash, reading the polls and the backlash and the bounce that the Republicans have gotten in terms of registered voters and whatnot. And people saying that, oh, no, I intend to vote because I was irritated. I was irritated by that, especially if you looked at the statistics relative to independents. Pretty interesting, the way independents reacted, which was not favorable to the Democrats.
I was watching that in a doctor's office. I probably only got to spoke English. And people were glued to that, and they were not amused.
Interesting.
Not amused. Yeah, it was very interesting.
Yeah,
not amused at all.
When I don't know, I saw something on TV that Joe Biden is the leading, is when you poll Democrats, he's the leading guy in their poll, which is yeah, Joe Biden. Of all the different people.
Did you see Biden and Trump debating? Oh, that'd be terrible.
Biden though is old school Democrat and he admonished the Democrats during the last election. You're losing right towards the end. You're losing the middle class, which is what Bill Clinton held sway with.
He's right, but he's so shameless about his stories and whatnot.
He's a politician.
He goes. It's hysterical. Yeah.
He's a politician, though.
Talking about getting breakfast at some place that's been closed for 17 years and that kind of crap, you know. He's hysterical. I'd love to see him.
I'd
pay money for that.
Yesterday, the president said he didn't make a bet with Elizabeth Warren. He said, watch the video. And you roll the video. It's like, sounds like you did. It sounds like you did.
Well, I tell you what. I don't think she won. I mean, that's goofy. That proves it. No, that is ridiculous.
Well, here's
Caucasian.
Here's to me is that had to be close hold, right? Because if that came out that there was less than there actually was. Right, she took it's called Any Port in a Storm. It's like, well, I've got good news and bad news for you. What do you want to start with? Start with the good news. Good news is, there is Native American DNA, or Western Hemisphere Aboriginal DNA. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what does that mean? Well, that's as far as we can break it down. Okay.
But here's the thing. If this counts.
That's the good news. Hold on. That's the good news. Okay. What's the bad news? You have less than the average American in you. Uh-oh. Okay. But see, politicians, we just obliterate the bad news, and all we do is we sell the good news. That's the way it works, right?
Yeah, but if she legitimately pulls that off, Guess what happens if you're a Native American and you've got student loan debt? You don't have to pay. So imagine everybody starts sending like 23andMe. They come back and are like 1/16th Native American, and they're sending this thing to the student loan administration saying, hey, I don't have to pay. I'm a Native American now. Just like Elizabeth Warren.
Let me just tell you, based on that, to check that block, come on now. That's ridiculous.
That's why the Cherokee Nation has rules and whatnot. Because depending on the tribe,
right,
there's substantial financial benefits that come with that.
Well, dependent on the tribe, they don't allow anybody onto their quote unquote roles. But again, her decision to check that block, you know, and I remember in college. Right? People talking about that. Well, just check Native American when you're going into financial aid. You know, I mean, you can claim, like, how are they going to prove it? What are they going to do? And you're like, I'm not doing that. So-and-so did, and they got their loans approved, blah, 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 blah.
I think that's something that they actually check up on pretty damn quick, because it's serious business in a lot of places.
No.
At the Osage tribe, the FBI made its bones. It was founded as an institution by solving a bunch of murders down in Oklahoma in the 19. It was the remnants of the Osage tribe, because they got like a monthly stipend of $70,000 because of the oil on their land and stuff. And the guys marrying these women and offering them. in order to get more tribal shares and whatnot. The very first case that the FBI saw, some Texas Ranger came up and solved the thing. It was just when the very first thing that Hoover got involved in.
The FBI cuts
its teeth. Solving that crime.
Cuts
its
teeth.
And all right. It was all over Indian rules.
Here's a trivia.
That's how serious it is.
Here's a trivia question for you. What was the leading cause of creating time zones in the world?
The leading cause of creating time zones.
Yeah. We lived for millenniums without time zones being created. What created the need for time zones? Kind of an interesting little piece of trivia.
Commercial shipping.
Wrong. One more guess. Close. Close.
Aviation.
Negative. Trains.
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, why do I give a shit what time it is in Rome if I'm in London and it takes me 2 weeks to get there?
No. That's exactly right. Yeah, it looks perfect.
But now that we're going to run a train, we all got to have a watch. This thing's got to run on time. And the big revolution was being able to tell time at sea in order to get your longitude. Just a little bit of trivia that you can win a drink with sometime if you're sitting in a bar and don't have any money. Who wants to bet? Here's another question. Hey, Mac, I've heard Tim on your program before. I know that he has a father and an uncle that have served in Vietnam. For him, what's the most important part of the Vietnam War or the part that he's most interested in based on growing up in a family that had Vietnam veterans? Interesting question. What is what interests you most about Vietnam?
I would say the fighting that went on in Northern I Corps. I've read about that a lot. I was reading about Vietnam as when in elementary school when my dad was overseas, and so I've always I've read an awful lot about it, I consider myself to be pretty well versed in the war, but my favorite time to look at it is the 68-69 time frame, 68-69-70. That to me was when when things were really in the balance as far as the conflict went. And it was when my dad and all my uncles were over there too, so, you know.
Got it. What about, for instance, the battle that I don't know anything about, that is the next one I need to explore is Con Tien, right? It's not, I mean, I've heard of it, right? But it's not as famous as other fights in Vietnam. And so, the fights that, went on there, holy smokes, man. Unbelievable.
Yeah,
it was, I would tell you, it's the last formidable enemy that the United States has fought was in 68-69. Somebody who could and would lay the wood and close with us. We haven't fought an opponent like that since then. And you read the stories, and I will tell you this, it's a bit disheartening, and your dad's part of the disheartening part of it. Because some of the things that I've done, some of the Marines that were in operational control of units were not what I would call technically and tactically proficient. And it's heartbreaking to hear stories like your dad at LZ Margo, Indy Company 3-9, at Getland's Corner, getting told to do stuff that they know is stupid. And their guys aren't professional enough to say, hey, look, you're out there. I'm not. You do what you see as fit, and we'll talk about it when you get back. And because we can always recock this thing and go get it again, but we can't replace dead bodies. We can't blow life back into humans that are dead. So I'll take your word for it this time. Or, you know, in your dad's case, what would it have taken to say, stand by for an encrypted message, I set, I shackle, you know, blah, 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 which is get south and east of the, you know, 1573 grid intersection, arc light or a light, you know, what would have taken, that would have been probably a 3-minute encrypted message out of somebody's day to explain to your dad, and also to solve the problem of we're not going to stack everybody in an LZ, and which ultimately has 150 Marines getting medevaced out of that LZ, and to quote your father's article, the title of your father's article, "The Dead Went Last." I mean, that kind of stupidity in Vietnam, to me, is just gut-wrenching, heartbreaking.
Yeah, but it has an awful lot to do with what you and I experienced in the 80s and the 90s and at TBS, as far as that I hate to use a tired word, but renaissance of military professionalism and reading and whatnot. I mean, my dad was always a big reader. That's because he always was, but he was not that. That was unique for his generation. I mean, those guys going over there, they had no common school. I mean, those guys came from all over the Marine Corps. Who knows what they're doing before they ended up out there in that job as a 3. Guy could have been an OSO in L.A. or someplace. Had no training, you know, none, except for some time in the FMF back in the early 60s doing God knows what. I mean, my God. It's just amazing and how much further we've come. And look, dude, we're not perfect. I mean, you see good battalions and bad battalions still.
Right.
Right?
Right, but I think I think the baseline's higher, and the other thing is that.
Oh yeah.
Well, one of the stories I love about that I'll link to the Renaissance is, when Butch Neal, after India Company 3-9, and again, the single most decorated combat action in Marine Corps history, as far as I know, and when I say combat action, I mean multiple hours, not multiple days, a fight, a Medal of Honor. 4 Navy Crosses, 6 Silver Stars, and 3 Bronze Stars. Okay? And that is the fight at Gettlin's Corner. And all you have to do is go on All Marine Radio's podcast page and do a search on Gettlin's Corner. Right? So when they get done, right, and they have 15 KIA, I want to say 47 or 48 wounded in action in one company. 2 weeks after, Bravo 19 had gone up to that area and got into a pretty big fight. And then I want to say Mike Company would go up there a month later and have a similar experience, except they would have twice the number killed. Okay. And no supporting arm shot in either attack. I mean, what are we doing? Okay. So anyway, my link to all of this is, Butch Neal, lieutenant type, comes back. He commanded the company after Captain Mike Getlin's KIA. He commands the company. They come back. He gets flown to 3rd Marine Division CP in Dong Ha, and the division commander meets with him, who ultimately is killed in a helicopter crash the following November. But his name's Hockmuth, Major General Hockmuth. So Neil comes in, and they sit down and talk, and he says, hey, what happened out there? What was your company commander doing? And so Neil's put in the position where he's defending his company commander. Why were you guys so screwed up out there? And he says, sir, we weren't. We weren't. We knew what was going to happen. We pushed back with our S3, but we got told to shut up and color, and the CO got told if he wouldn't do it, they'd send somebody else out there who would. And so We talked about not saying that we would comply with the order, but not doing it. He didn't like that, and so we divided up. So when the division commander and the division opso hear that, all of a sudden the interview ends. Okay, thanks, Lieutenant. See you later. He's walking through the division CP, and a major stops him, and he says, hey, were you with 3-9, India 3-9? And he says, yes, sir. And he says, I'm Major Al Gray. Can you come over to this map? Could you explain to me what happened? One guy in that CP was interested in what happened to him. Al Gray. Al Gray. And who is the guy that drives the intellectual renaissance of the Marine Corps? Al Gray.
Yeah, but he was a controversial guy. I remember this I was in the Navy, but my dad was obviously in the Marine Corps, and he was a big fan of Al Gray's. And there's a lot of demarcation in the officer corps between you're like a gray guy, a lot of people were making fun of this whole maneuver war thing.
Right. Oh yeah.
And it took a long time for that to catch on. And a lot of it has to do with James Webb being the Secretary of the Navy for that brief period of time too.
Right.
And he had something to do with all that. And he's rather an unconventional thinker also. So Al Gray was lucky. I mean, that was just pure luck because he is not your he was just not your typical officer.
Right. And
your story says.
Right. No, yeah. And I love that story. Can you imagine? Nobody wanted to know what was going on. And then what I got was, hey, R3 was, they were prior enlisted guys with, time, World War II and Korea guys.
Yeah.
20 years in the Marine Corps. And, they were fighting World War II and Korea. And
could you imagine being in a similar situation where somebody has a rather dramatic incident of that nature up in your area and they're back at ICP-1 headquarters? You think you're going to sit down and walk them through this thing step by step? Come on. To us, that would be a routine thing. And back then, it was unusual. That's just weird.
Right. And now even to say, out there, you wouldn't even radio back to modify the plan. If you were out there and you didn't think it was prudent to divide your company into three ambushes, you wouldn't do it. And you would report it back, not call back and ask for permission.
Right.
That's the difference in us today.
It's all that started with the mission type orders.
Right.
There's no doubt.
Right, maneuver warfare.
No doubt.
The Enlightenment. Mm-hmm. All right, what else you got going on today? Now that you have such great weather.
No, I sit down and do a little bit of writing. I like you in working at writing, and I like you find it some pleasure. But it's got to be done because it's on my schedule.
All right. I got to go today, too. All right, man. First of all, I appreciate you hopping on and throwing me a line. I appreciate it.
Not a problem, brother. Always glad to come on and chat. And I hope you have a great day.
Well, good luck with the detachment. I'm a huge fan, and if you ever get somebody in the National Registry's ear, tell them they need to get on All Marine Radio and tell the story of the Marine Corps League. Right? They need to come up with an alternate uniform for younger guys, and it's probably blue in color. And they need to, change the lens a little bit, man. Open up a window and grow the thing. Because, I mean, the Marine Corps League is a great organization, and it needs to get greater. And they got to change. They got to evolve it.
Well, that's food for thought, buddy. Next time I talk to some of the Texas state honchos, I'll plant the seed, man.
Plant the seed. All right, man. Yeah. Have a good day.
All right, brother. Take care.
There you have it. That is the one and only Tim Lynch, the Lynch Mob, here on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio. We're going to take a quick break. The Gunner joins us next.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute, heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.